Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Thoughts of a Random Citizen. This is actually an episode that you might have already heard before if you've been a listener from the start. This is because we are currently in the process of repurposing all of our old podcast episodes and cleaning up the entire feed. These changes will allow listeners to enjoy the best episodes and highlight the most insightful content. Now, if you're newer to this podcast and wondering where to find or why you can't find season 1 and 2, don't worry. They'll eventually be available on our website, torqueunited.com, after we do some fun, dare I say, innovative things with them. But stay tuned for that. In the meantime, we plan to release rewinds every other week to repurpose older podcast episodes. And this will simply just allow listeners to revisit classic content from insightful and featured guests and enjoy it in a new light at a different time in their life to hopefully provide a new perspective. At the end of the day, it's our intention to bring the best possible content to you. So enjoy this repurposed rewind. But at the end of the day, sticks and stones, people, break your bones, but words shouldn't really hurt you.
I'm the kind of person who really likes to get to the bottom of things.
Yeah.
And I don't let my own belief system get in the way of fact.
It's one of the most important financial centers in the world, but in terms of freedom of speech, expression, and civil liberties, it's a dictatorship.
Hey, everybody, and thanks for listening to another episode of Thoughts of a Random Citizen. I have an in-person interview today with Fernando Pujol. He is a resident over here in Spain. He has a crazy background ranging from Peru to South Africa over to the U.S. with a degree in corporate job, now to an entrepreneur here in Spain. We talk about a heap of things in this episode ranging from 50,000 years ago to current events today and the wonderful world of food. Because this is an in-person interview, they typically seem to run a bit long, so I split it into two parts for you guys so you didn't have a two-hour episode to sit down and listen to. Anyways, I hope you guys enjoy the oh-so-funny Fernando Pujol. You can just come on in, man. Just pull up a seat. If I had a third mic, I'd just have you come in. You have some perspective with the whole Romanian situation that you just got back from. Did you hear what was going on over there?
Yeah. I've been following, actually. You know I'm a history buff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
I don't know if you've heard. So, yeah, actually, part of what I studied was geopolitics and political science. And you know, understanding the history of Ukraine and Russia, you know, you have to literally go back all the way till the initial Vikings, or they were called the Viking Rus, actually moved into Kiev. And then you've got the Cossacks, and you've got the Tartars, and you have the Mongols. And it's just all this different group of people. Mm-hmm. You know, so Russia is really, people just think of a monogenic type of group of people, and they're not. They're very, very different. You have Mongolian looking Russians, you've got the blonde, blue eyes, you've got the Chechen Muslim, you know, brown hair, dark skin, brown eyes. And so when you understand the collective of what the Russian states were, you understand a little bit better what's going on. And if you look at Ukraine, which actually most people don't know, that Ukraine actually means the border state.
What? Really?
And Ukraine, it's a mixture between the Polish, Lithuanian, with the Cossacks and the Tartars, as well as the as some other Russian tribes, you know. And so you could, anything that somebody could say about Ukraine, most probably in one way or another, they're right.
Yeah.
Like when Putin says, we're going there to take care of neo-Nazis.
Yeah.
You know, the Russian president.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense, does it?
Mm,
it doesn't.
No.
So,
yeah, right.
But yeah, there was, so if you read about Barrera, who was a nationalist from World War II, that he actually allied with the Nazis. Later on, of course, to be arrested by the Nazis.
That's kind of how the Nazis did.
You know, but he allied to generate more Ukrainian nationalism. And then you've got, of course, the partisans. They were mostly connected with the Russians, you know, with the Soviet Union at the time. And then you had the more moderate, connected with the Polish, the Lithuanians, more of the Western Orthodox religious. Even though, funny, the Orthodox religion in Ukraine is the only Orthodox church that it actually is aligned with the Vatican. No other church was aligned with the Vatican.
Really?
Yeah. So you've got these really lots of different groups of people, lots of different philosophies. So you could say, oh, you know, they're Catholics, they're Nazis, they're communists. And yeah, I'm sure you'll find them.
Yeah.
But then when you look at the party, the actual national neo-Nazi so-called party, they want two parliament seats. You know, in 2015, it's a joke. It's, you know, it's like saying that the guys that raided the White House on January 6th, that's most Americans.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and when you were just saying that, I was literally just thinking, the more that I travel and the more I go around, the more I see that no government is really like one face of the people. Like, all governments don't even remotely incorporate what the people of their country are. Like, well, they try, and you know, some are better than others, but in the end of it, like, Putin can't just go, yeah, dude, that's, you know, Nazis over there, we got to take care of the problem. Like, no, dude, no. Because you can say the same thing with the U.S. but you go to California as opposed to deep Arkansas, you're going to get a bit of a different demographic. So
absolutely, and a different philosophy. And you've got people that tend to incline more liberal, more conservative, more religious, less religious. You know, they go for the Knicks or the Lakers. And literally, it's very tribalistic.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, that really politics today has become a professional sport. That this is my team, and no matter how wrong they are.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm like, well, I know that he did murder a child, but that kid was pretty bad.
Yeah, it's like,
what?
Yeah. I just don't get it.
So it is. It's,
well, and then they tie up their livelihood in it now, too. So it's not just like a government in which you, you know, volunteer or give back out of the goodness of your heart. Yeah. It is your livelihood, your life, your career, your money, your status. So when you get that ingrained, yeah, well, if you get in a situation where you're running up for re-election and it's like, well, you know, you're about to be out of a job and out of all this other stuff. Well, I mean, yeah, I can blame them on the outside, but I was just literally having a talk with somebody else on the podcast and we had the same thing. It's like, yeah, you can't really blame them, but you can, because that's what their position is. So, and like one thing that just blows my mind is, it's called public office, and yet they're the most like private, you know, like they're not allowed to see what's going on with them. And it's like, well, then what the fuck is it called a public office for?
That's right.
Like, and I have less privacy that rights than you, like, but whatever. So
the story of the politician.
Yeah, exactly. But anyways, I was really curious to, we just started recording, by the way. I just threw it on because we were already talking.
Fine.
I'm here with Fernando, everybody. Fernando, how do you pronounce your last name? Because I don't want to butcher
it. It's actually called Pujal.
Pujal.
Which is actually a Catalan last name.
Oh, really?
And a pretty old one, too. It dates back to about the year 900.
Jeez.
Yeah, so something that in Catalonia is it's well taken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, because you've got Catalan last names, mm-hmm. and many of them being derivatives of a last name from France, or derivative from a Castilian last name, or derivative from another language. And then you've got kind of like the old last names, you know, the Leopards, or the ones that end, I would say the ones that end in T.
Okay.
Tend to be pretty old, but, and also based on the translation, because my last name actually comes from the word Puig Alt, which means high point.
Really?
And actually, you can go to a town, which is literally less than an hour away, which has actually the observatory, one of the observatories for Catalonia. It's called, the area is called Anoia, and the town is called Pujalt. It's spelled verbatim my last
name. What?
Yeah.
Did you feel something like this? You're like, this is mine.
Well, I did. Very clean restrooms.
Oh, there you go. That.
Yeah. So I did relate. Uh-huh. You know, me having OCD.
Yeah.
But you know, it's and it has a very strong connection in my family. You know, we from my dad's side, we're very strong from the Catalan descent, even though none of us spoke Catalan. You know, God bless their souls. And on my mom's side, Italians. You know, from Genoa, literally from Genoa. It's yeah, so it's I've got these two very high, strong, very proud, very productive, self-sustained cultures, which are very alike.
Italy
from,
and
Spain, I mean, or the people from Genoa.
Oh yeah,
and the people from Catalonia. They're kind of like the people from Genoa are called the Italian Catalans, and the people from Catalonia are called the Genovese Spaniards.
What?
You know, because it's got that they're a little more centered, they're more conservative, hard workers. So yeah,
a little, rough frame I've noticed here. They don't really. I get a lot of looks, man.
More serious.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, then you go to the you go to Andalusia. Or you could go to Naples, or you can go to Sicily, and it's a party.
Oh yeah,
you know, people are having fun at the south. So it's funny that I have a family from two very different sides. There is so much alike.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, I know you're based now in Spain, in Sieges, which we're going to dive into. But you're from Peru. And you lived a long time in the U.S. Can you elaborate on just kind of both of those for us?
Right. And in the middle, I grew up in Southern Africa. So
what?
Yes.
This is news.
I did not tell you that.
I don't think so. That's we didn't cover weird. That.
I tend to mention
in
that
Southern
a lot.
Africa.
Yes. Yeah, so
like South Africa?
Actually, I stayed Swaziland and Mozambique were the place that I lived. I stayed there for about 8 years.
How did you find those places?
I didn't. My father took me there as a child.
Okay.
Trust me, when he first told me I was going to Mozambique, I had to look it up in a map. It was very exciting, you know, starting to travel at the age of 8.
Yeah.
I always tell people I got on a plane at the age of 8 and I never got off. I got more miles than most pilots. So it kind of started there, but you know, I'm Peruvian born. I was born in Jesús María, Lima. Very proud. The Hospital del Empleado, which is it was kind of like the people's hospital at the time in the 1979. And grew up in a beach town.
Oh wow!
So
I see, you've gotten really far away from that, haven't you?
Yeah. I kind of grew up in Lima, but 3-4 months I would be in a beach town called Punta Hermosa, which is where my family, most of my family from my mom's side, actually lives today. They all live at a beach town, funny enough. And but when I was 8 years old, my father got a really good job at the United Nations.
Oh wow!
Yeah, at International Labor Office, ILO, and we moved to Mozambique. You know, flew through Brazil to get to South Africa. From South Africa, we got to Mozambique. We went there in 1988. So the experience, there was still apartheid when I got to to South Africa. Apartheid, you know, when they would separate the people.
Oh, geez. Okay.
Yeah.
So like segregation?
It was legal segregation.
Oh, my goodness.
So South Africa went through legal segregation until the early 90s.
Jesus.
When Nelson Mandela got elected, you know, W. de Klerk actually first, he, you know, apartheid became legal, a lot of pressure from the world, something very similar to what's happening to Russia today. And kind of like the pressure from the world, it just did not become sustainable for South Africa. And it kind of pulled that change. And I kind of lived through all that. So that was an
eye-opening,
interesting.
At least.
It was an interesting paradigm in my life. And it really changed me very, very quickly when I got there. And when I arrived there, I felt I was coming to another world, another planet, a totally different culture. But with time, I realized that, you know, we're not that different after all. You know, some kid growing up in Peru and some kid growing up in Southern Africa were very similar. We're 98% similar and 2% ego.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, man. Do you have much diversity, I guess, in places like Peru? Or is it less than it would be in places, well, one like CGIS and kind of...
It would be... Well, CGIS is... It's a special place. it's an anomaly of the world.
Yeah.
I would say you have a lot of European embedded culture
in
Peru.
Yeah.
A lot of Spanish, mm-hmm. Northern Italian as well. Of course, it was a Spanish colony, Northern Italian. Most of the population is mestizo, which would be a Native American with white, okay. would be the higher percentage of the population, some more than others. In my case, for example, I have about 10% Native American.
Okay.
Nice. You know, so and then you do have some African culture in Peru, but it's a small population, mostly located in certain areas, which is Chincha, which is an area in Peru that very strongly descend from African Americans, of course, slaves at in 16th, 17th, 18th century,
mm-hmm.
and. But really, and you've got a big Japanese culture, big Chinese culture, but, you know, they came over a lot for the fishing, the railroads and so on, just like they did in many countries. But you do have an international presence of people, but the culture is very much Peruvian centered. We love food. That's, I would say, if you would talk about it, and that's because it's such a fertile country. Things grow in Peru that don't grow anywhere else in the world. We're very proud of that. And there's a lot of folklore. And of course, the Incas, are from mostly from Peru. You know, of course, Bolivia, Ecuador, Colombia, in a smaller facet part. So yeah, you do have a lot of international influence.
Uh-huh.
But I would say the highest percentage of the population will be mestizo, which comes from Native Americans.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, though, in the world, the way that everything's going, it's international influence is kind of hard to kick out.
If yes.
You know what I mean?
Like, well, but that's when people call me a globalist. Yeah. Oh, you're such a globalist.
Is the globalist a bad thing?
And that's I'm like, thank you?
Yeah, right? Like, cool.
It's like, I'm sorry, I did not know the world came with borders.
Yeah, right? It doesn't. You know, it doesn't.
If the world did come with borders, then every single house and within every house, every room should have a border. Because we can break down the individual, and some people are multiple individuals.
Yeah, that is so true.
Bipolar people, you have to live in two places.
Two different, you're taxed twice. You're taxed twice.
You're taxed twice.
Please.
So, that's one of the things that I do see myself as a born globalist. It just makes no sense when there is no that fun competition talking about the World Cup or sports, or you know the guys playing against the girls on a Monopoly game or some fun. If you're not if there's competition and no fun, then you're just walking backwards.
Wait, so you're saying that you like things like the World Cup, though, right?
Or I love the World Cup.
Okay, yeah, I was just...
That's what I'm saying, because we're having fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless your team is winning, which is pretty fucked up.
Yeah, well, the U.S. doesn't even get there very often.
They try.
We put out our effort.
The United States is going to get better for the next 134 years.
Yeah, so well, that's the end goal, right? Jesus, it's been a rough start of it as we've gotten up to now. But so before we haven't even really dove in yet, I kind of wanted to full circle on when we were starting off with Radu, who is back here somewhere.
He's hiding.
Yeah. We were talking about how he just got back from Romania and how he... was just like, yeah, they're pretty much asking me to join the army because there's like a drone that was downed, and then Russia's like, is it, you know, did Romania do that? And then they're like, well, Romania's in NATO, and it's just like this crazy, but they're literally like the militia's going crazy. So like, being a world citizen, like, what, just give me like a quick, like, what to do? Uh-oh, this is getting rough, or maybe it's not. What do you think?
We don't have nuclear submarines, you know, 250 miles away from Florida. So I think we're better than the 1960s.
You're saying Russia doesn't have nuclear submarines?
No, I mean, they're not.
Exactly.
They're not a few hundred miles away from South Florida. So we did have the Cuban Missile Crisis. Yeah. So we've had worse times. Okay. This is a proxy war. Unfortunately, when a proxy war is you know, in a country that is so close to us that we connect so much more. Mm-hmm. If this would have happened 40 years ago, nobody would be talking about it.
Yeah, because there's no interconnectivity.
It'll be on page number 3 of the New York Times. But now we're connected. You know, now war is a sickness. It's seen as a sickness. It's always has been, but now we know about it. We hear about
it. You can see it as it's happening. Yeah.
We're living that war. And if somebody comes with some bullshit statement that it's not happening, we're just not buying it, you know? So you could hide for so long. And so again, I think that's what's happening is that we are just being as cautious as possible. And it's a good time to be cautious.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think Romania, just like every other bordering country of Ukraine, is saying, we already have to prepare ourselves for one of the biggest humanitarian crises since World War II. You know, it's much bigger than what happened in Serbia and Bosnia and Montenegro and Croatia at the time, with Yugoslavia had its own moment, because we're talking a much larger population. It's also affecting the world economy and world trade a lot more. So, no, I think it's more preparedness. It's more about cautiousness. It's more about letting Russia know that the world is watching. And it's better to be safe than sorry. But if somebody tells me, is this unprecedented? Was this... I would say unexpected, but not something that there was no possibility of it happening. This has been brewing up since they took Crimea. They also did that to Georgia. They went into Chechnya as well. And the world didn't react. The world said, bad Putin.
Yeah.
Bad Putin.
Yeah.
And there were some light sanctions, like he couldn't buy skateboards, things like that. But now, you know, the shit's real.
Yeah.
Companies are shutting down for public relations. Yeah. You know, trust 100%. Me, McDonald's doesn't really care about the health of people.
They just don't. it's just
true. Like, we worry about the children. We want them to be obese by the age of 12. So, no, it's just really about, it's being in Russia right now is a real bad public relations disaster. And I think it's the right response. I think the consumer has the power. Not the people.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
The consumer. And that's, you know, it's not the people. It's the consumer. For example, babies, no power. Parents of babies, big power. They buy diapers. They buy formula. They buy toilet paper. They buy baby wipes. That's power. The power of purchasing. And today, consumer power is being seen today that companies are like, let's get out of Russia. This is a public relations nightmare. And actually it could be a boost on our reputation. It's that cold. You know, companies make money, lose money. And, you know, there's no morality in growing a business and feeding your stakeholder. But on the other hand, you know, getting out quickly and being the, we got out first. You know, it's like pat in the back. They're like, good for you. You know, I'm going to still buy Nike, buddy. but that's a good response. Yes, is it hypocritical? Sure. None of them really got out of, you know, stop selling stuff because of the Iraq war. And you did not see like IKEA saying, we're closing stores in in Michigan because you guys entered Iraq. I don't know if they had stores in Michigan at the time, but I'm just throwing out there. You know, it didn't happen. It depends on the temperature of the world. And right now, I think Romania is reacting, Lithuania, Poland. You're going to see a lot of the countries surrounding Ukraine, Moldova. They're going to be very, very cautious about the days to come.
Well, speaking of kind of that corporate lifestyle and maybe not no morality, but just kind of that whole thing. Can you tell us a bit about your background specifically? And then you have a great entrepreneurial background as of today too, which obviously we're going to dive into. Yeah. But kind of you grew up in all of these, you know, South Africa, Peru, but then you got educated in university in the U.S. Yeah. You've read, I think, like, what, like 30-something encyclopedias about presidents or something? Like, can you just tell us a bit of your background in kind of the U.S. side of things?
Yeah. Well, when I was, I arrived in Miami. My father was a great member of the United Nations, not the greatest entrepreneur. God bless his soul.
Yeah.
Good heart, bad pocket. But so we actually tried to open a business in Miami. We moved to Miami when I was 16 years old. And I started university, a small Catholic university called St. Thomas University in Miami. And I always loved history. That was really my what I wanted to be since.
Like a historian?
Yeah, a history teacher.
Oh, no, okay. Nice.
Yeah, yeah. So I but then me being also a math fan.
Oh, God. What?
I love mathematics.
Yeah.
And when I saw how much they paid, I kind of also did a degree in computer engineering, computer information system, what it was called at the time. It kind of kept changing. Then MIS, and, you know, we gave it multiple names. But computer information system was what was called at the time. So I kind of did that, and I was studying history, and then later on I actually changed my major from history and I did a major in sociology. But I kept, because just because I, and this is the thing, just because I couldn't be a history teacher, that didn't mean that I couldn't know history.
Mm-hmm.
I added as many history classes. I would tell my sociology teacher, could I take this sociology class? Would you count that credit? And he'll be like, why didn't you just become a history teacher? I'm like, why didn't you just a history major? And I'm like, ah, man, I like sociology. So I kind of added as many history classes as I could. But it was really a passion for me. Very passionate about history and really the anthropology of human behavior. Mm. So if you look at sociology, it's really the anthropology of human behavior. It's very hard to understand sociology if you don't understand history. So I kind of say history, like math is the basis of science and history is the basis of social science.
I like that. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So if you don't know where shit came from, most probably you don't know shit. You know?
Do you think that history affects, well, not only sociology, but do you, like, how important is it and how much do you think our history has been either changed or rewritten, being that it's such a passion of yours? Like, how important is it trying to gather all sources, I guess, because obviously history is written by the winners, is a famous quote said by someone. But is that something that you see a lot in your studies, and especially considering it's a passion? I was just curious if you know anything about that.
Yeah, so I try to, when I learn about history, I try to avoid winners and losers.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, really, it's the best history you get from archaeologists and anthropologists.
Okay.
Because they tell you how people lived. And if somebody tells you, oh, there was a huge war here and thousands of people died. And, you know, they'll tell you that. And then a guy goes, dude, I actually scanned the whole ground. No war. Sorry. Never happened. Because we know where wars happen. And we leave marks. You know, dinosaurs in this area? Nope. No fossils anywhere. But over there? Lots of dinosaurs. So, you know, by get the science, you know, so history and science kind of mix together. And I really focus a lot of that. Today we have DNA testings. We have carbon dating. It's like, it just confirms the story. So we can hear a story. You're absolutely right. Most of the history that I studied in the 80s is wrong.
Yeah. Literally. Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
I took a whole freaking class on the Anglo-Saxon, on the Saxon invasion of England. A whole class. And they had like, oh, it was these people and they arrived from this area and they told this whole story about the Saxon invasion. Then they did the analysis of the land and like, okay, where are the battles? And now they've kind of go, maybe it wasn't an invasion. Maybe it was a migration. It's like, it's very different. Somebody breaking into your home, you know, and stealing, you know, your TV versus a friend walking in your house and watching the game with you.
Exactly.
You know,
having some beer, just chilling. Like,
it's a big difference. And that's what we're talking about. So So again, you know, to get back, I was very passionate about history because it whenever somebody told me something, mangoes are good for you. I'm like, okay, let me understand. Where's the study about mangoes? And they're like, what? I saw it on Instagram, so it must be true. So no, I want to know. And I tell them, Brazilian nuts are good for you. You know, lowered heart disease, they're excellent for cholesterol control. We could talk about that. And there is actually an article in a study of 32,000 people for over 17 years that was done. And you could actually read the study. If you have the time, you could read the 378-page study or take my word for it. But I will actually give you the study. And by the way, I am guessing the amount of pages they are. It just sounds. I have not counted them. But what I'm saying is that, you know, it's, you actually have to have a follow-up question. When somebody tells you, oh, did you know that this is great for you? And I'm like, details, please. Go on.
Exactly, yeah.
Where do you get that information from?
Dude, you belong in the show me state, which is Missouri. That's obviously where I come from. Mm.
Where in Missouri?
I say obviously.
Where in Missouri?
Is Kansas City.
Kansas City,
that's
Missouri.
That's not how we talk at all, but yeah.
No, not at all.
From my end. I'm from Kansas City, but our, you know how every state in the U.S. has a state motto, yeah. Like it's on the license plate or whatever. I think Sunshine State is Florida.
Florida.
Yeah. But Missouri is the show me state, and it essentially just means that, like, you can say whatever the fuck you want, but show me, and I'm not gonna believe you until you show me.
You
belong in Missouri, man.
Now that's why I understand why when I went to Missouri I got like 28 dick pics.
Yeah, that what? Was, I mean, that's fair. Yeah, that's how
I
it works.
I was like, damn it. the thing is, absolutely. Yeah. And to me, it's like, you know, give me the ingredients, man.
Exactly.
Don't tell me that pudding is very healthy for me. What the hell is that pudding made out of? Is it made out of flour or is it made out of almonds? So, you know, again, I want to understand. And I don't come from a skeptic point of view. It's like you want to know where things come from. It's okay. Ask. It doesn't come from a bad place. It's the opposite. It's like you have my attention. Like when a guy tells me, dude, bro, I was in this bar and I like beat like 23 guys. I'm like, good for you. I have no interest in your story.
Exactly, yeah.
But if a person tells me, hey, you know, I was able to slice a tomato with a spoon, I'm like, okay, go on.
That's
you
weird.
Know, yeah, totally. Yeah. I'm like, that's okay, so true, how man. Were you able to do that? I want some details about that magnificent spoon. You know, so if I have no interest about something, I will not ask questions. Because I'm not trying to ridicule anyone, which I did in the past. I used that. I used that power to hurt people, just to embarrass them or do things like that. And then, but as you grow, as you mature,
yeah, those things.
I'm like, no. I'm really interested in what you have to say, and I think there's a valid point in what you're saying. I just want to get a little more details on it. So it really comes from a good place to question.
Yeah. Oh, I completely agree. That's everyone who, whether I meet them or just doesn't understand that, I'll have a few drinks and I'll be out at a bar and I will just get lost in as many conversations as possible. And I'll find the most unique, odd people in the bar and just ask them 1,000 questions just because, like, that's it. I'm just curious about, well, I don't know what it is that I find to talk about, but I just love to find information and more perspectives from as many people as possible. Because I think at the end of the day, you know, like if they say something that you're like, what? No, wrong. But hang on, why do you think that? Then that is cause for growth. And then kind of on top of that, at what point did we get from, because when I was brought up in school, when like the internet was just becoming a thing, at what point did we go from don't trust anything on the internet, verify, fact check, do your own research, to, oh, it's on Instagram and Facebook? Oh, dude, it's got to be true. Like, what point did that flip? Because it flipped. It is definitely flipped. Yeah. And I just don't know when that happened, but yeah.
It's terrifying, but that's because people don't know history.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And full circled. But literally, you're right. Like, And that's one thing that I love history too. I'm not saying I have your 34 encyclopedia whatever knowledge.
Well, but it's no, but it's like watching Star Wars. It's like Lord of the Rings. I have friends that are Lord of the Ring psychos.
Yeah.
They will tell you the story of a story of a story of shit that was invented. And I find that fascinating. Yeah. You know, I'm a nonfiction freak. I only care about nonfiction, except when it comes to Lord of the Rings.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know why.
That's like, I love Star Wars and Marvel. I don't know why. I kind of like Lord of the Rings, but like there are some weird things that I nerd out on hard. Yeah. But otherwise, I'm nonfiction.
Yeah.
I totally agree.
About Valars, where Gandalf comes from, and Sauron. Sauron was really, you know, what was his name? Morgor or whatever his name was. He was the real guy.
And Frodo?
Then, you know, no, in exactly. But really, there's a story behind the story.
Yeah.
And it's pretty fascinating. How a human can dedicate his life on creating such a fantastic story within a story within a story. And I think that's the beauty of creativity, which I personally do not have. You know, I know where I'm good at, and I'm very clear at areas that I am not. And I stick to what I'm good at because... if not, I'm not doing a service to the world.
I could not agree more, man. So kind of spinning that and just reeling back in, because I feel like I've let us get to some foreign land, which I love. So you've talked a bit about foods, and kind of obviously people are like, why is Fernando throwing in how to cut a tomato with a spoon? I just wanted to kind of highlight one thing that you're trying to do right now in the entrepreneurial game, which is creating this natural food kind of delivery. Feel free to explain. And then obviously I want to ask you a few questions on top of that. But what is the entrepreneurial startup that you're kind of going through right now here in Spain?
Well, it's when I was in the United States, I realized very quickly that there's healthy foods and unhealthy foods. That's easy.
McDonald's.
That's easy. Yeah. Now, figuring out the balance and the how much and what does it give you is very difficult, right? So I get back to the anthropology of things.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I kind of, when somebody throws something at me, I kind of say, did we eat it 30,000 years ago? Because human evolution did not start to consume, you know, high fructose corn syrup until, you know, early 60s, mid 70s, and it started to increase and increase and increase and so on where we are today. Our bodies don't understand that consumption of sugar, really. Yeah. We're talking about, we started consuming sugar in the 17th, 18th century, you know, 19th century. And then again, in the 20th century and 21st century, that just peaked off. So you kind of go back to, we've been, you know, us as humans, the Homo sapiens, we've been walking the earth over, you know, 100, 200,000 years, right? I'd say at a full evolved presence. And what have we been eating? And I'm like, well, 99% of those years, we ate pretty basic shit, right? We had apples and we had strawberries and we had fruit and we had berries. You know, and we did have some animals, not a lot, because we did not have refrigeration. So we couldn't have cattle because you kill the cow, then what are you going to do? You're going to eat the whole damn cow.
That's, yeah.
You know?
You got a town.
Yes, then we came to salting, you know, around 8,000, maybe 9,000 years ago, maybe a little more. So we were able to preserve some foods. We did beef jerky and so on. But that's really the latter part of the human existence. So our digestive systems did not evolve in 50 years, in 100 years, in 1,000 years. Our digestive systems have evolved in 100, 200, 300, 4,000, a million years. Our digestive system has been evolving. So I kind of went through history, understanding the anthropological part of the human body. And so, okay, so what do we need, right? What do we need to perform properly? What do we need to be good? You know, for our body to go, You did well today, sir. You did well. So you kind of go back to some of the answers that we know. We know how many, we have a pretty good idea of how many vitamins we have to consume, how many minerals we have to consume, and what phytochemicals are good for you and for what. Mm-hmm. We have done a lot of scientific research on food. Literally, every pharmaceutical study, before they come up with this particular pill, they studied some based product, plant-based product or mineral product, you know, and they studied that. And then they derived the medicine. Mm. So we have so much study on minerals, on vitamins, and on plants, and so on, that we have the data. And so I kind of said, if we need all these different things, why can't we just build a diet that covers those things? Why don't we have a diet that every day you're eating your vitamins, every day you're eating your minerals, and every day you're needed the most essential phytochemicals? And it kind of, and I said, shit, why not try it myself? And for many years, I started eating that way. Well, not stop drinking.
Yeah. Which I want to highlight in a second.
It is.
Yeah.
You know, it's my sin.
Yeah.
But I started noticing changes in skin, in inflammation in the body, in energy, in stress levels. You know, I feel better 10 years later. So I feel better at 42 than I did at 32. And for most people would say, you look better. Your skin tone's better. You know, you look fitter. So yes, there is that. That goes away. You know, time's a bitch, right? Yeah. But it's about that feeling. I sleep better. You know, I have more energy when I walk around. I have less pain in my body. That's not supposed to happen.
Yeah.
It's supposed to work the other way.
Yeah, I'm feeling that now. I need to get a new diet.
So I did see the benefits of that. And so what I call the concept of eating was multitarian. You know, it's mostly a plant-based diet. It's mostly vegetarian, but it does include some animal, you know, I recommend a lot of anti-inflammatory animal foods, which its eggs could be anti-inflammatory, but depends where the egg came from. Mm. You know, also fish. It's extremely high in nutrients. It's an anti-inflammatory animal food. I recommend those. Yogurt, you know. So there's a lot of animal products that I did recommend. It is 10, maybe 15% of the recommendation of the diet itself. Mm-hmm. But again, you require that to have your basic needs from natural foods. So I don't know a vegan that can, where are they going to get their vitamin B12? Oh, we take pills. And I'm like, so you're going to tell me that 30,000 years ago? Some guy was taking pills.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. So I'm not anti. I think vegan diets are great. I think you can take B12, no problem. It's a choice of life that you are trying. But if you look at the complete anthropological history of the human body, there's something missing. You know, small amounts. But we did have a small amount of animal consumption in our diets.
Yeah.
So I kind of look at it that way. And really the business is, I'm going to put it all together for you. And I'm going to sell to you in packages that you can put in your fridge for the next 7-8 days.
Yeah.
And every day you could eat like a multitarian. And sometimes you might skip it, you know, but then the next day I always tell, look, if you can do it 5 times a week, great. If you could do it 4, all right. If you could do it 2, it's better to do it once a week than not do it at all. So it's kind of like something that gives more to you. It's building.
Yeah.
Anytime you consume this, you're building. You're doing something good for the body and so on. So that's kind of like when the idea came from about developing this. And I chose Sitges because, like you said, it's a melting pot of cultures, ideas. You're talking about the rich, the poor. You know, the well-educated, you know, like Trump says, the undereducated, I love the undereducated.
Dude, people are going to be is Donald Trump just on this podcast?
I'm ready. I'm always at the background. I'm always around.
Thank you, Donald. Oh my God. It's so good. Like you can literally hear it in the headphones and I'm like, that's Donald Trump.
No, I'm not saying the undereducated. That's a horrible thing to say. So again, it's a melting pot of culture. It's a melting pot of social standing, if you want to call it that, of languages, of foods. And I thought, man, if I want to do a focus group of this type of product, you know, Sitges would be the perfect place.
Yeah. Okay, so speaking, I wanted to kind of break down. I know you talk about colors and foods being a big thing, like magnesium being essential to pick up calcium in milk.
Not in milk, in general.
Wait,
in other words, calcium, if you consume calcium, you have to consume magnesium.
Because otherwise your body doesn't take it, right?
Otherwise you won't absorb it.
That was mind-blowing to me. You can drink, because I love milk literally for the calcium in the bones. You know, that's what you've been told. But you can drink as much calcium as you want, but unless you have magnesium.
That's right.
And how do you get magnesium?
Throw an almond in there or have some dark chocolate with
it. So what do you think about like almond milk and stuff like that?
To me, I eat almonds.
Yeah, okay. Because not 30,000 years ago.
There you go. Right,
I'm getting I'm getting it.
That's one.
So speaking of kind of that entrepreneurial product in Spain, I know you're kind of in that MVP stage. You've had, obviously, you own your own restaurant, Niji Bar in Spain, which is a gluten-free restaurant, which we can touch
and
on.
And sugar-free on the
and
rice.
And sugar-free,
With sushi, they incorporate a lot of sugar. So I am there are three powders that I don't recommend, and it's from worst, you know, to best, okay? These are the top worst white powders: sugar, flour, and cocaine.
I knew it. I knew the third one was coke, man. I was just waiting.
And that's from worst to better. Mm-hmm, so that's how bad sugar and flour are. They're fillers. They mask things. They're
why is flour
great
bad?
Disguise? Because it just makes everything, you know, taste better. You know, you can flour a piece of shit and fry it, and you'll be like, this is pretty good. what is this, garbanzo beans? It's like, no, it's dog shit. But I put flour around it and I deep fried it, and you're eating it.
There's some sugar on it too.
There's some
make
sugar
it taste
on
a little
it.
Better. It's dessert.
So yeah, they're fillers. Yeah. They're things that mask things. They're things to lower cost. They're things to add preservation. You know, so, and they're bad for you. Just, you know, just like pretty much anything that, you know, it's out there to disguise something that's not good. You grab a very bad alcohol, you throw in some sugar in it, and it's drinkable.
Yeah.
The so worse true. The alcohol is, the more sugar you throw in there.
That's so true. So kind of going from that in understanding your background, you had on top of the restaurant, you've had a pretty vast expertise in like sales, corporate yes. life. You tried to get away from that a bit when you moved over here to Spain, but they said, please don't leave. So you're still kind of flirting with that. But how has the launch and kind of, can you explain for all the entrepreneur wannabes out there, the MVP process of getting that minimum viable product to what your end goal will be? And then, explain a bit about how that process has gone, what your thoughts have been in that product to launch.
Sure. Doing business in Spain is very difficult.
Mm. Which I also want to talk about.
Yes. Pretty much for me was, first of all, let's get the science, let's get the products. So we know which products would be required to put the product together. But then it has to be something different. If I would be cooking the product, I'm sure I'll get a few people to eat it for a while, and they'll be like, Fernando, I'm bored out of my mind. It is great. I feel the healthiest I've ever been, and I want to kill myself. So I'm not a chef. I don't know how to cook to a level for other people's taste buds. I want to make sure that it's something that it generates joy while you're eating the product. So I do have a partner here, a local chef here in Spain who's fantastic. So you have to line up who are the players in there. And then you do have to go to the lowest common denominator. Do not complicate yourself. Because the problem is that when you go too big, you have too many expenses. And when you make too much of an investment, you want to recuperate that investment as fast as possible. And it kind of kicks away the philosophy that you started this with. Most Starbucks didn't start to be what it is today. Amazon didn't start to be what it is today. A lot of this started with this concept of we're going to make things better. And at the end, it just became overly corporate. And, you know, right now, a lot of these businesses, in some cases, are doing more harm than good to society. So to me, it depends. Why are you doing it? Are you doing it for money? Are you doing it to create more well-being around the world? And I think that's one thing that I want to do this project. This is not a, just a business. I think it can. It needs to be sustainable. If not, the second Fernando goes away, people are like, this shit ain't making any money. You know, and they'll just discard it, or they'll change it, or they'll do whatever they have to do for the business to survive. Mm-hmm. So it needs to be sustainable, but trying to make it sustainable, but at the same time, not breaking its core essence of well-being, you know. And I kind of wake up every time in the morning and I go, okay, what do I have to do today to generate well-being? Worst case scenario, just be neutral and under no case whatsoever, you know, create, you know, negative vibes or bad feelings, or, you know, do walk in a room and make things, people feel uncomfortable. You know, so it's about that to me. And nutrition, I thought, and we talked about my concept when I built this thing. I said there was three steps in the circle of life to me, which is the physical, the psychological, and the sociological, mm-hmm. right? And the big part of the physical would include the fuel and the movement. So if you provide yourself with the right nutrients, your body will respond properly. And then you have to move that body with physical activity. I don't call it exercise. I'm not telling people to do CrossFit or climb mountains. But I'm saying you need that physical activity for your body to perform, right? So that's a physical side, the correct nutrients and the right movement. When you prepare your body to physically be able to achieve what your brain wants, then you feel good. And feeling good is as contagious as feeling bad.
So true.
So the more people feel good, the better the world is. Mm. And when people wake up in the morning and say, well, there's nothing I can do to change the world, they're wrong. Mm. Because if you wake up and you tell yourself in a minimum factor, I'm going to generate some well-being today, it's just a smile.
Yeah.
You know, it's seeing some garbage on the floor and picking it up and putting it in the bin, or even in your own home. You know, for all those young people, you know, 14, 15, 16, 18 year olds that still live with their parents and they want climate and they're worried about climate change, they should start with the basics, which is cleaning their own fucking room.
Says the father, apparently.
You know, you want to win your parents? Yeah. You start with that. It's like, you know, I want to clean the environment. It's like, pick up your shit, man.
So
you know, your socks on the floor are not going to help the environment. Yeah. So little things. It's just generating well-being. Yeah. And start with the inner part. Start with your significant other. You know, start with your partner. And how do I generate well-being with that person? Then go to your family members, go to your friends, go to your community. And it's like, how can I generate well-being? We all can generate well-being. We all have that ability. Just by not being an asshole automatically, you know.
That helps quite a bit.
That helps.
Yeah, it really does.
So I kind of looked at it that way. So if you can take it, but if you don't take care of the physical, there's no fucking way you're going to generate well-being, because the second you wake up, you're going on a downhill. So I said, what's the essence of generating well-being? And it starts with the physical. When people say, well, my mind is not ready to eat better, or my mind is not ready to stop smoking, my mind is not ready, you know, to cut drinking, my mind is not ready to be more physically active. No. No, it's the opposite. Be physically active. Eat better. Stop putting toxins in your body so then your mind can be better.
So true.
You know, you can't walk backwards for a very long period of time. So that's one of the things that I said, look, if I find a smoker, right? And I'm not gonna convince him to stop smoking. I might make a dent. You know, I tell him, how much do you spend per pack? $5. You
buy in Australia, a pack a day, it's fucking and you, ridiculous.
Well, in Australia, it's a lot more than that. Exactly. So I can tell him, well, I could give him the math. It's like you're spending $400, $500, $600, you know, a month on cigarettes. You know, yeah. You cut that in half, you save $300. So mathematics might be able to help that person cut down. But instead of doing that, I'm like, look, you want to smoke? I get it. Why don't we do something to improve your lungs and improve your kidneys by eating better? And funny enough, when people start eating better and they start feeling better, guess what? They do less.
Smoke.
They smoke less.
Well, that was one of the things you were saying to me, being a drinker. If you've seen the podcast cover, I have beers in it. It was one of the big things was that you said beets or whatever. Hell, you're saying, look,
betaine.
Have my diet, like just eat it and it'll make you feel better. But I'm not saying you have to stop drinking. I'm saying that when you're drinking, eat the right foods to make sure your liver doesn't just implode. Right. Like, can you kind of talk about, well, drinking specifically? But.
Sure. I'll give you the example of a motorbike, right? If you find a guy who loves driving fast on a motorbike, you know, and he goes these crazy routes and he likes to jump things and so on, and you go to him and tell him, look, man, I'm not telling you to stop riding a bike, but why didn't you just put on this fucking helmet and put some pads on your shoulders and your knees? You know, the probability when you fall,
it's a lot better
yeah. than if you don't have it.
Yeah.
So I kind of put it that way. I tell people to eat a lot of spinach. Why? Spinach or beet or kale or chards, cruciferous greens mostly, are very high in betaine. And that's something that protects your liver, you know? And there are other phytochemicals that protect your kidneys as well. So what I tell people is like, why don't we focus on protecting what you have so you can enjoy what you enjoy, right? Let's start with that.
Yeah.
And funny enough, with time, you start focusing more on feeling good than trying to cover those, cravings.
Yeah. Because your mind's a bit sharper, eh?
Right, yeah. Right. So I don't want to twist your arm and, you know, and tell you, quit smoking. It's disgusting. You know, the problem is not the cigarette. The problem is you. You know what I mean? So you kind of lose the narrative.
Yeah.
You kind of, and they people come back and say, well, I know my grandfather. He lived until he was 98 and he was smoked like a goddamn chimney. You know? And,
well, I can say the exact opposite story about my grandma.
Yeah.
So.
Well, out of one 98-year-old grandpa, there are about, I don't know, 1.4 million grandmas.
Of the others. Right. Yeah. So kind of speaking on the health, I really want to highlight Spain. But before we get to Spain and kind of the entrepreneurial environment here, and I guess why you chose Spain, I really wanted to highlight what we're talking about with this food. What do you think about things like Beyond Meat? I'm assuming being an investor. Fernando wears all hats, in case you guys aren't aware.
Yes.
He is an investor, a legendary like entrepreneur, salesman, all of these things. But one of the other things he does is know a lot about foods, a shit ton about foods. And so I'm really, really interested about what you think about things like Beyond Meat, not for the investing side of things, but for the health side of things.
Well, Impossible Burger or Beyond Meat, it's goo, right? They're trying to substitute a feeling with a chemical process of making you think that you're eating meat.
It's that whole mind firing.
Do you remember the sugar?
Yeah.
The flour? Well, Beyond Meat is just trying to substitute sugar and flour with another sugar or flour. I believe their approach, it's more trying to make people think they're eating healthier,
mm-hmm.
but they're not.
Yeah,
a lot of it is fillers. A lot of it is chemicals and sauces that are not naturally built or made. But on the other hand, I see companies like Eura right here in Spain, in Catalonia,
mm-hmm.
that they are doing something very similar to Beyond Meat, but they're only using natural products.
Really?
Yes.
Can you elaborate on that? Because I'd love to.
Sure. Actually, you could actually go and flip the product and look at Beyond Meat's ingredients, and you would have to have a PhD in chemistry.
To know what the hell's in there, yeah.
Right. But if you grab Eura and you flip it around, all you would have to know is vegetables, seeds, fruits, and legumes.
Wow.
Because they were able to use those products and create a fantastic product. It's more expensive. Like Beyond Meat is cheaper in Catalonia than Eura.
Really?
And Eura is made in Catalonia.
Yeah.
Jeez. Right? So it's a product that, for example, in my sushi, we have vegan meat and vegan chicken, and we use this company. I got no connection. Eura, yeah. No relation, no connection with the company at all. It's just that they make a healthy product, and it tastes pretty darn good.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I try to look at that. Just because it's vegan doesn't mean it's healthy, right? Flour is vegan, sugar is vegan, cocaine is vegan, heroin is vegan.
Yeah, okay.
You know, so sawdust is vegan.
Yeah.
You know, what I'm saying is that, so that's the thing. I do believe that these type of companies are going to succeed if they focus towards health and not just a substitute of other products. Would I invest in Beyond Meat? No. Did I invest in Beyond Meat in the past? Yes.
I knew that was coming.
When I realized what they did, I moved away, not because I thought my moral compass said, oh, how you can't invest in companies that don't do good to people. No, my money does not discriminate. You know, I do buy pharmaceutical companies that make pills for diabetics, you know. But on the other hand, I thought it's just not smart. I think a lot of people that will turn to veganism, especially today, are turning because they're looking for healthier options.
Yeah.
And very quickly, they're starting to realize that maybe veganism is not for me. But it's a great start. So I tell people, you know, if you're thinking of going vegan, go vegan. Try it out. Try it for a week. Try it for a month. You know?
Yeah. I tried. I successfully made it. I think 48 hours?
One day.
I started to feel weak. I started to feel weak. I was like, what's happening? And literally all my mind was telling me when I wanted food, I was like, give me meat. Like, I don't care what kind of meat it is. I need bacon, burger.
I need a dead animal right now.
Right. And I was like, I don't know. Like, that's got to be, I don't know. But no, I totally agree with everything that you're saying. So.
You're absolutely right. One of the things that we have, for example, is a menu of vegan sushi. And trust me, we dedicated a lot of time to make it taste good. It's a lot harder to make vegan products taste as good as other products. I think we did a pretty darn good job. And I would love to invite Greta and you over to have vegan sushi night.
Yeah.
We can do it on Thursday, which is there's a special. If you guys come tomorrow,
we
actually have vegan Thursdays.
Really?
Yes.
But not only are you trying to make vegan stuff, you're making vegan, like non-gluten, non-sugar. That's
exactly
so much harder.
But that's exactly.
Yeah.
So how do you make something vegan without adding flour and without adding sugar? Because that's what vegans do. Just throw a whole bunch of sugar in and they'll eat it.
Yeah.
You know? Or pile it with sodium or salt. And, you know, so really you need to mask the tastes. And we didn't have to do that. You know, it's like I said, I'm not a good chef. I'm not a good cook. But others are, luckily.
Exactly.
And I know them.
Yeah.
So that's that was one way of making the vegan product line actually quite, not only quite tasteful and fulfilling, but also popular. It's actually one of our most popular products, yeah.
So moving on to the thing that I'm most interested in, maybe for selfish reasons, but the entrepreneurial environment here in Spain. What made you want to, because I know you travel back to the US quite often, you have contacts and you work there and live there for a long time. What made you want to start and launch your product here in Catalonia and Sitges in Spain?
Mostly selfish reasons.
Okay, nice.
I love this place. When my wife and I came here, maybe in 2011, we just fell in love. We fell in love with the town. And we bought an apartment in 2013, which you've seen. It's a small place, very quite cozy. And we used to come here all the time. And it was our happy place. You know, it really became our happy place. And after when COVID, actually before COVID happened, in 2018, I told my wife, you know, why don't we just leave? You know, 25 years later, right? It's like, it's time, people tell me, how do you do that? And I said, you just do it. You don't,
wait,
you can't.
Leave the U.S.
Leave the U.S. Yeah, because if you think about it, right? Look at the typical American family. You know, they've got a mortgage. They've got two kids. They have two cars.
So you're describing my family perfectly.
Yeah. they got a 401k. You know, they're paying into Social Security. They have good credit, so it's easy for them. Some of them, not all of them, but you know, I'm talking about the guys, people that made it, right? You know, one's a doctor, the other one is a business owner, or it could be a director or a vice president in a company. People will be like, well done. But then you look around and there's fucking no essence. There's no, you're like, okay, so?
Now what?
Now what? No, not only now what, it's like my kids are in the house watching TV all day long. They don't go outside. You know, my wife and I literally have to go through trenches, you know, to be able to be in a place where we enjoy each other. So it's a struggle just to enjoy each other. You know, why is it so hard? We always have to worry about so many things. Logistics is a nightmare.
In the U.S., you think, comparatively?
Well, yeah. It's like you need a car to go
everywhere. Okay, that's fair. I was just thinking logistics in regards to like delivery services.
Oh, hell no. That's fantastic. Oh, don't get me wrong. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. You've got logistics. Oh, you want people to take shit to your house?
Oh,
amazing.
Dude. Amazon, like 2 hours now, isn't
Amazon,
it?
Like, Amazon has like on the same day. Oh, you go to a bank and you feel like a god. It's like, I will to open a business account. Done.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you haven't even received my name. And I'm like, you're fine. Okay. Mr. Pujol, we know everything about you. You know, it's like so
true.
Easy.
Yeah.
Because America loves money.
That is
America
true.
Loves money. Anything that has to do about making money, saving money. You know, you have a credit card that gives you 3% on every time you go and dine. Spend. Go out there and spend and be free and pay very high interest if you don't pay us on time. But it's a consumer. And I think we had a moment. If my wife and I wouldn't have kids, maybe we wouldn't have come here. But I wanted my kids to walk free on the street without me worrying about, you know, there not being any sidewalks in most places. So it was more of a, we wanted to change our lifestyle. It was a very personal decision. Now, it wasn't an entrepreneurial decision.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
The Spanish government is the opposite of the United States. They want all your money. You know,
yeah.
Literally, you come here, you're going to pay for the bank. You're going to pay fees up your asshole. Because they don't trust the people. You know, they don't trust the people. And it's very different to the United States. The United States is like, I trust you.
Yeah. So before we go further, because I do want you to go further, I've noticed that and I kind of already know where this is going. It really just comes down to the mindset, I feel, of the governments of, well, Spain. But where is that lack of trust? Why is that lack of trust already kind of there? Like, what is that?
I think there is an historical factor here in Spain of extreme fear when it was a dictatorial state to the aftermath when that dictatorial state stopped. Mm. And you get rid of that fear. And you can't really send soldiers to their house. And I think also it's not a systemic problem just in the in Spain. It's a systemic problem in Portugal. It's a systemic problem in Spain. It's a systemic problem in Italy. It's a systemic problem in Greece. People that live near the beach and have a lot of sun tend to be a little more laxed. And there is this sense of people looking for shortcuts, right? And I think the government just assumes
that everyone is
going to take a shortcut.
How do you fix that? How do you get the general populace to say, "Hey guys, if we just stop taking shortcuts together, it'd be a bit better for everyone."
That's a very American thing.
Is that? Do you think that's not like practical?
I think that the government because you're
come
you're,
on team.
No, you're exactly that's. You're absolutely right, but everybody will say yes.
And then
50%
will do the opposite. Yeah.
You know, so and the other 50% after they realize that the other 50% didn't do it, they'll be like, "We're not gonna do it either."
That's so true.
You know? Mm. So I think that it's a cultural issue that Spain would need to find ways of generating income that it doesn't come from the general population. In other words, the people that pay the most taxes in Spain are not the big corporations.
Yeah.
It's the autónomo. It's a self-employed that opens their own business and they are literally carrying the weight of the country in their back. And you could be working 40, 50, 60 hours and coming home with, you know, $1,400.
A month.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just for the people who are like, "Oh, $1,400, that's... No, a month.
A month.
Yeah.
And rent is $900.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think that Spain will have to change.
They have to.
They have to. It's just it's not a sustainable system. It will eat up into their economy. I do think that changing towards credit cards, I thought that will have more income represented and Spain would get more taxes from its purchases. But what did they do? No, they did the opposite. They actually raised the charge for the autónomo. And it's just now it's about politicians taking care of politicians. Mm. It's not about the people. It's really about job security for and it repeats around the world. So it's not something that is Spain specific. You find it a lot in Southern Europe. This situation. How do you work around it?
Do we want to record this part?
Well, it's okay. In the way, it's like, don't do things without understanding what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
Number one, get a good gestor.
Lawyer.
Accountant.
Oh.
Lawyer. That's number one. Number two, understand your immigrational status. If you become a resident, then you have to pay everything you have. So the first thing is understand what rules you're playing within. Second of all, I recommend every single person to follow the Mitt Romney strategy.
What is the Mitt Romney strategy?
Corporations are people, my friend.
Yeah.
So if you're an American and you want to come to Spain, you must not exist. You must become a corporation. Do not charge anybody for any service. No. It's your name, LLC, that charges people for things. Because Spain will ask for your personal wealth.
So you're saying that if you come to Spain, have a corporation outside of Spain in charge
in the U.S.
Yeah. That's kind of what I'm doing. But it's,
right.
Yep. Can we highlight how and why Spain is actively doing this to itself? Because one, I'm over here right now and I'm an American and I'm going through a partner visa to get citizenship here. And I wanted to open up a business here, but that's the last thing I want to do now because of how they just, it's like 40% across the board, which makes it damn near impossible to just run a business unless you wanted to hemorrhage money, especially not to, like, considering in the U.S., it takes, what, 2 to 5 years to even turn a profit? No. That's when they're not taxing you 40% and you have all the tax systems on your side. So, like, why?
It's a great question. I think there's multiple factors. I think one is just plain laziness. Changing the laws is complicated. The other thing is that, do you think they've been screwing the Spanish people for such a long time? Imagine they are like, oh, Americans? You're cool.
Literally.
You're cool. No, come over here, open a bar, and pay no taxes. Not like Jorge over here, who's been doing this for 35 years, and we've been fucking him up the ass.
Yeah.
No, you see.
But then the Spanish, I guess, populace isn't as actively involved from, this is from an outsider's opinion, in politics, are they? They're not, they don't, again, it's that beach vibe of fuck it. Who gives a shit? I'm living my life. Or is that not accurate at all?
I think it's very social. I think you're going to find that Spaniards are very involved in politics when it comes to social issues. Protesting about, female equality, women equality, or protesting against gay rights, or protesting against fascism, or protesting against, fill the blank of social issue. But no, when it comes to corporate decisions by the government, no, you're absolutely. They don't go around saying, "Are you?" If I was an autónomo, I'll be burning cars right now. What they're doing to the self-employed, it's literally self-destructive.
Yeah. Well, rights are one thing, because like you can obviously give rights to everyone. That costs no money. But in regards to like social programs, they're paid for by a good entrepreneurial class, no?
The thing is that they're paid a lot of it by the autónomos.
Well, yeah, exactly. Right? But when you're screwing that class long term.
Yeah, and the big companies like Repsol and those companies, they have agreements with the government. They pay less. But the United States does charge taxes, but the small business, they say it, I'm not going to charge you taxes, man. Play your game. I'm going to let you grow. I know out of 100, 2 are going to make it. But the 2 that are going to make it, I'm going to make it big. And we're going to make money of those big businesses. Mm-hmm. The other guys, they're surviving, man.
Yeah, and they're employing a bunch of people, paying for a bunch of things. And it's not like they're not paying taxes. Like, they're still paying. While
they're paying taxes, they're paying Social Security, they're going out there, they're feeding the circle, right? And you trust them. IRS says, it's all right. Just don't fuck with me.
Yeah, exactly. And as an entrepreneur, that's the last thing you want to do, because if you fuck with them.
I'm going to be cool with you, right? I'm going to be cool with you. But if you're not cool with me, you're going to jail. Here, not a lot of people are in Spain in jail for not paying taxes. They say they're going to go to jail. The judge says they're going to go to jail. Nobody goes to jail. In the United States, you don't pay taxes, your ass is in jail.
In jail, yeah.
So I do think they're very different systems. The system in the United States is like, we know you're going to pay taxes because you're not stupid. In Spain is that, we know you will not pay taxes because you're not stupid. So it's a little bit of the opposite. Now, if you like living here you have to find the way. And there is a way. And the way is to simplify. Don't overcomplicate. If you're going to open a business here in Spain, it needs to be a business to generate sustainability. But your growth needs to come from somewhere else.
Best advice you could ever give.
Let the company in the United States make the money and the company in Spain sustain the life.
Okay.
You know? And once in a while, the business in the United States lends money to the business in Spain.
Gifts it. So I guess that kind of just full circles back to the question of if that is true. Obviously, you have your sustainability with your sushi. What is the thought, I guess, then to do your multitarian? Well, I can't, what's it called exactly?
Yeah, multitarian.
No, but the
company. I didn't mention it. It's going to be called, we're still developing. It's going to be called Cambida.
Cambida, that's right. Yeah. So what is the thought to launch Cambida here just because of the love of the culture? No, what is it?
No, I think initially I'm here. So that's one of the things. I am the number one, I'm going to be the number one customer. Do you know how hard it is to cook a multitarian meal? I'm talking about maybe 25 to 30 different vegetables, fruits, seeds. It's a pain in the ass. And I do it every day. I spend about an hour prepping food, you know? And I would love for a company just to sell it to me. So I'm building. So that's one of the things. It's like, I'm like, every time I tell somebody about being a multi-tarian, they're like, oh, I'm sold. And they go, so what do I have to do? And I kind of, as I'm talking, I'm losing them. They're like, oh.
That sounds like way too much work.
So I have to cut the broccoli. Really? Can you just, seeds also? What? Which seed? Oh, all of them? Oh, I have to buy all of the seeds? I only know one seed. I have to look that online. So it is. It's you know. It's peppers. It's garlic. It's onions. It's like never mix garlic and onions. Fuck that. Mix them all. It's all good for you. Like you find all these health gurus. Nobody kale. You have to try kale. And acai. Acai. Fantastic. Oh, all you gotta do is eat acai. It's like, can you name shit that people
feel
can
like Trump
spell?
Just almost came back.
So guys, he's such a great thing. Had a Brazilian friend. Great people. Great people. They know how to dance and do the lambada. The lambada. There's like really lambada. Oh, it's like from the 80s, bro.
Yeah.
You know, so
well, I mean, at the same time, though, this is a really good place to have it because, man, the Latin European culture, I was literally just having this conversation last night with Greta because she will not and refuses to buy. I was like, can we just get some effing ready meals, throw it in the microwave so I can be done? So because obviously that's not what you're about.
Wow.
But I was like, sometimes when I've cooked, you know, a meal every week or every day of the week for lunch and dinner, which is what happens here. And, you know, she's like, I'm so done cooking. You cook. I was like, okay, if it's my choice, I just want to put something in the microwave and be done. But it's a no. It is
well, you
cut
could,
food.
But the microwave is not a bad thing. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. The problem is the food
that you throw in,
that you're buying, that you're putting. It tends to be 80% flour.
Yeah, really.
It tends to be most probably something with pasta.
Mm.
Right? Or Hot Pockets.
Well, everything I eat nowadays is pasta, considering she's Italian.
But you could go with other types. You could go with buckwheat, which is sarraceno. You could go with lentil. You can go with... There's so many good quality pastas out there today. So the problem is the flour. It's the products that they're using to make the pasta. And flour has never been a very highly nutritious product since its beginning, since its inception.
Mm.
You know, it helps from a starvation.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's about it.
Yeah. So obviously you're very familiar with history. Do you think that there is much, because what, before World War I, there was a big talk about how the population was going to starve and we had this food crisis. And so then we started kind of reproducing food. It might have been World War II. I'm not exactly sure. But there was this big talk about how the scientific community realized, hey, we need to start developing food and different ways to produce for the population. Obviously, the population from World War I is vastly larger now. How much that has carried over into why we produce foods in the way we do now? And do you think it's sustainable, or do you think we can go back to a time or a place in which allows proper eating, proper actual foods?
You know, actually it was something that happened after World War One, and one was that people don't read a lot of history, as we've already mentioned. We had a soil problem in the United States and around the world that we were destroying fertile land because of farming. What it was doing, it was just being plotted incorrectly. It was the same product. Equipment was introduced that would just hit the layer. It wasn't breaking the ground. It wasn't breathing the land, the soil. And what happened is that the land started becoming arid, you know? And actually, there was a huge program in the United States to change all that. So all these ideas, like how do we make wheat stronger? How do we make soybeans stronger? How do we make things go better so pests don't eat it? So yes, there was this famine fear around the world. And trust me, in the 20s, 30s, 40s, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions of people were dying of famine. Today, not so much. Today, more people are dying of heart attacks.
Yeah. Obesity, literally.
Obesity right now, most probably, is the biggest human threat in the world right now. The problem is that, yeah, they saw like we need ways, and they changed actually the genetics of wheat. Today, the wheat that we grow has changed. The wheat that we grew in the 50s is not the wheat that we grow today. Mm. You know, it grows a lot faster. It grows everywhere. It's biologically changed.
Is that bad for us?
Yeah, it's bad because there's no more wild wheat anymore. Very few wild wheat. You know, I would have to research more on that. I don't have all the information, but I know that most of the wheat that we eat today, it's pretty much genetically modified from the past. You know, wheat changed to be able to grow everywhere. And that was the idea. In the past, it was like, we're going to have a population crisis, right? So how do you solve world population? And people were saying, oh my God, we're going to keep growing. We need to feed the world. How do we do that? Instead of, whoa, how do we just stop growing? You know, and no, it's not by creating a disease in a lab that's going to kill 90%, 80% of the population and your mother. Hmm. So it's like the guy at the lab was like, oh, I'm going to make this disease that's going to kill all these people. Like, what about your mom, dude?
Yeah.
No, it doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. So how do you stop world population? That's the problem. The world was going to become too many people. It was just one factor, man. It was one factor that stopped population growth. And it's just one, which is women education. The more women are educated, the more they tell the guy, fuck you, get off me. I'm not having a baby. Or I'm not having another baby. You know, I want to be an engineer. So as more women got educated, with literally if you look at the literacy rate of women in the 1950s and literacy rate today, you're talking about a 40, 50, 60% factor difference.
In the 1950s?
Yeah.
Wow.
So you
But the population is...
Worldwide, I mean.
But the population is growing.
It's a lot more. Yeah, but it's curving.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So I'll give you, I'll throw some.
Well, and we're living longer because of health.
We're living longer, yeah.
But
it's curving, right?
Yeah, because I know China, I think India is the only one, US, like all these places
India's
around the
flat
world.
Now.
Yeah, but they're like, now it's about to start curving down.
Exactly.
Because,
now they're flat. It's going to start curving down. So even China's population is already declining. Japan has been declining for years. Russia has been declining for years. You know? Who told the communists to teach their women how to read?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but it's, I'm saying that facetiously, but what I'm saying is that the higher level of education women have in third world countries, the lower the population you're going to have.
Wow.
If the guy says, oh, I want 7 kids, and she's like, you bear them, motherfucker. You know, it's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So I do believe that there's going to be a curve down. I don't know how fast it's going to be, but I, based on some research that I have seen, we're going to peak out in 2050. Maybe at 10 billion, 11 billion maybe. But and then it's going to start coming down. Spain, negative population. Italy, negative population. Sweden, Norway, Finland. United States, if it wasn't for immigration, the United States will have lower levels of population. So it's all that. But don't people, you know, they have to understand that they want a better quality of life. So the spends per capita is actually going to increase. So it's good news.
Yeah.
We're going to have less people, but each person is going to consume more, is going to spend more money. So it'll be a more productive population.
Nice.
So I'm an optimist.
Oh yeah. Well, and that also just shows, like, everyone's saying, oh god, you know, XYZ is gonna explode, it's a terrible, we're living the worst time in human history. First off, this is amazing. I've just portably brought freaking microphones to what's up.
I have a question about what you said, because recently Elon Musk said the opposite. People should have more kids.
Yes. He's afraid that the world population is going to decline too fast. It's going to peak down. And he understands that because people are not having any children.
And if you guys couldn't hear that, Radu, who is our amazing bartender, we are so gracious to be in Jinta right now. What's up?
He sneaked us in.
Yeah, he snuck in there. he said Elon Musk actually said the opposite, which is that people should be having more babies.
And Elon Musk should be having more babies. I'm sure he can pay for them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he might as well house them all, right?
He could have 800 kids. They'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, couple of million per child. It's he could have 8,000 kids and it'll be fine. So instead of telling people to have more children, he should just go to, you know, Iraq, Palestine, Ukraine, you know, Somalia, and just adopt a whole bunch of little children and send them out to space.
I totally agree. But it's funny though that, you know, we say these things like, oh, this, you know, the world is going and this is the worst time, when I was just saying that it's not a bad time to live. We have energy, we have aircon, we have this amazing thing. But it's also just, maybe if we are patient, educated, and communicate with one another, everything's going to be all right. If we just, you know, talk to each other, what do you think about that?
We live in the best of times, but our mind thinks it's in the worst of times. I'm telling you, we've got two universes. We've got the real universe, and then we've got the meta universe. And the meta universe is everybody feeling anxious, everybody feeling stressed.
Well, it comes down to the fact is because that's how it has been designed. Because it's not been designed around your pleasure. It's been designed to exploit you and sell you to the highest bidder. It's been created specifically and purposefully to go into your mind, figure out your weaknesses, and then use those weaknesses to create thoughts.
For example, this situation, this horrible situation that's happening in Ukraine.
Oh, terrible.
I tell people, it's not about you. People want to connect their issue that they're fighting for and connect it with Ukraine. You know, you can see people from the right, you know, saying, oh, it's because of they took the government from Russia used to have a government, and they stated a government, and it's a regime that wasn't supposed to be there. And then, but on the other side of the left, you've got people saying, oh, it's about, you know, transgender rights and gay rights. And I'm like, what? No, wait, whoa. You know, it's not about you, man. And people today are just generating anxiety because we're so connected. It's a beautiful thing to be connected, but it's exhausting. And if anybody here right now doesn't feel exhausted about what's happening in Ukraine and they're not physically affected or psychologically affected, good for them. Yeah. Because most of us are. I wake up in the morning and I watch German news. I don't watch American news. I watch German news. They tend to be pretty straightforward, you know, ever since 1945. and they kind of put it out there and they give you different perspective. It's actually, they have a German English channel. You know, they do talk like this. Some of the English is very nice. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, it is the best news channel because they're connected with the people. You could see it's not some guy making $12 million a year. You know, it's a guy making maybe 65,000 euros and after taxes, you know, he's making 22.
Yeah.
But the thing is that there is this genuineness behind a lot of the news. I watch German news because it's a little more genuine. But yeah, there is this anxiety that every time there's going to be a crisis, every time something's going to happen around the world, people are going to freak out.
Yeah.
And also we are trying to overprotect society from the bad. The other day, I was telling them, they're like, oh yeah, but I wish schools, they prohibited bullies. I'm like, what?
What?
Yeah. You know? And I'm like, you know, as a child, I was bullied.
Oh, yeah,
I was
same.
You know, I was in a boarding school.
Bullied. I was kind of a bully, depending on the day.
You know, exactly, like, right? Sometimes you were the bully. Sometimes you were bullied, and it's part of the learning lesson.
If I wasn't, then I would be a vastly different person than I am today, and I would view people vastly differently.
Exactly, and it's good to have to learn to deal with bullies, and it's good to feel regret from those you bullied.
Exactly.
And to tell the truth, I have more in my head. The few moments that I bullied someone, it was a young Polish kid. I remember like it was yesterday. I know the moment, I know where it was, and I bullied him. And I know that. And that is stapled in me.
Yeah.
It's a tattoo that I can't get rid of. You know, so it wasn't a learning experience just from being bullied and being the victim, but also victimizing other kids.
Yeah.
That if I would ever come across him, I would apologize. And I can assure you, he would tell me, it made me better.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, because, you know, you think about it when you're a kid, but then you know, they're still alive. They're living life they've long forgotten or, you know, grown from that scenario.
The bully remembers more than the bullied.
Yeah, I would agree. But to kind of full circle here, and we'll wrap it up because this is going to be a two-parter, no doubt. But we were saying about how, you know, social media, to an extent, the technology of today can kind of go into you, and there's a lot of negative things. If it's implemented appropriately, great. But with Ukraine, I think one thing that we are seeing is the benefits, if implemented properly, what social media can do is the fact that, all right, we are now at this stage where we are seeing the absolute best scenario, which is, hey, Putin, not super chill right now. You're just murdering a bunch of our people. The freaking soldiers that are under you aren't even okay with it. This is the best outcome of what social media, well, not the best, but this is one of the better outcomes of social media. Yeah, it can have stresses to us, but you know, one dude's murdering thousands to hundreds of thousands of people at the moment. Hopefully that number doesn't get higher.
Well, absolutely. It's just a very loud microphone. Social media is just a very loud microphone that can be used for good, you know, or for bad. You know, you can have a guy like Donald Trump go out there and promote horrible, xenophobic, you know, dog whistling statements just so he can get some likes. Or us finding out and communicating with people we didn't know existed 3 minutes ago.
Yeah.
So, yes, this is a good side of social media. That, but nobody talks about it. Nobody goes out there and says, thank you, Instagram. Thank you, Facebook.
For that. Yeah.
Thank you, WhatsApp. Thank you. No, it's only the bad that they talk about. And again, thanks to social media, we're so much more connected with an area that in the past would have been absolutely isolated and ignored.
Yeah.
So, us being connected has a good side and a bad side, but at the end, it's progress.
Yeah, I agree. And I really think it just comes down to the developers, man. Like, they have to realize that the way that they create this technology is crucial to how it, like, in the meaning, the algorithms, the way that they mine for user data, it needs to be changed. I mean, but that's me thinking of the mental damage. But anyways, so moving on from that, Fernando, this has been amazing, man.
Awesome.
I'm so happy to have you on to speak on Spain, to speak on your entrepreneurial journey and just you being a world citizen. I always ask one question to all of my guests at the end of the show. If you could take all of your life experiences, turn around and give all of those experiences into one piece of advice, what would that piece of advice be?
Wow. It's because you said one. And the word one, and I don't want to throw too much of a cliche.
No, go on then.
But I go back to, literally go back to the second you wake up in the morning, ask yourself, am I going to generate well-being or not? That's what I tell people, because well-being is... it's a self-reflection. It's because when you generate well-being, man, it's the definition of happiness. Because you make yourself happy and you just have to share that happiness with others and it generates well-being. That's all you have to do. So be happy. You know, genuinely, genuinely be happy.
Wake up and check yourself before you wreck yourself.
Just wake up and go, what am I going to do good today?
Yeah, I love that, man.
Yeah.
I love that.
That's it.
And then one more thing also. First off, if anybody is in Barcelona, it's a quick train ride down. Come to see, just a great area. You have the Niji Bar down here. Is there any other thing, if people want to get in contact with you, if for some reason they're listening to an English podcast in Spain and they're interested in Cambida, I'll probably butcher that pronunciation. How do they get in contact with you?
No, they can go to multitarian.org. Mm-hmm. If they don't know how to spell multitarian, they can try it 6 or 7 times.
I'll put it in the show notes.
They'll get
it's easier that way.
They can send me an email through there.
Okay.
And again, they can come to Sitges, go to Niji Bar, ask for Fernando. And I am literally 28 seconds away. So any person that wants to come and have a conversation, I'm more than happy to entertain.
Sweet. Fernando, thank you so much, man.
It's a pleasure.
Cheers. And that wraps up another episode of Thoughts of a Random Citizen. If you guys are familiar with Torque United or Thoughts of a Random Citizen, you'll know that we want to enable entrepreneurs, freelancers, digital nomads, and investors to better collaborate and network with one another to implement their innovations around the world. If that seems like something that you're interested in, being a freelancer, a startup founder, an entrepreneur who is interested in not only traveling the world, but networking with a group of investors, head over to Torque United, reach out to us, and let us know so we can include you on the upcoming platform that we're in the process of developing. And if I can give any bit of advice, I would say the world is a beautiful freaking place and you shouldn't spend it all in one place. Otherwise, have a great rest of your week. And that wraps up another episode of Thoughts of a Random Citizen. Thank you everyone so much for tuning back in. For those who are new listeners, welcome, and I appreciate you joining. I hope you enjoyed the podcast and our guest today.
If you are new and you're doing anything remote, be sure to check out Citizen Remote. It is fantastic if you're already traveling the world. It's a great app to join a very quickly growing community. It's a great tool for those who are just about to begin traveling and figuring out how to navigate that, especially if you work remotely. It's a fantastic platform, and we continue to build more and more tools for you guys week in and week out. Otherwise, if you're an entrepreneur and you're looking for tools or assistance with the next steps of, you know, what you need to do with your startup, or if you're looking for software development, network connections, reach out to us at Torque United. Otherwise, if you're just tuning in for the conversations, thank you. That's why I love doing what I'm doing. Keep tuning in and actually keep a lookout for the not-for-profit that we're about to open up. You know, its main focus is going to be on international collaboration and helping build a borderless world, because it's something that I'm very passionate about. That's why I'm not only doing Torque United, but Citizen Remote as well. Really exciting stuff on that horizon. Please keep up to date with all of that stuff, the not-for-profit and entrepreneurial side of things at Torque United. But again, if you're traveling the world, check out Citizen Remote. If you're wanting to travel the world, if you're a remote worker, check out Citizen Remote. Check out the app we've built for you guys. Check out the platform we've built. It's only growing every single week. So hopefully you guys will take part in that with us. Otherwise, I will speak with everyone in a fortnight. Until then, cheers.